The headlines: Russia conducts fresh drone attacks on Ukraine. President Zelensky says the army intercepted all 13 drones that targeted Kiev. EU energy ministers failed to overcome their infighting to strike a deal on a gas price cap in response to Russian supply cuts. And also in our headlines, Brazilian president-elect Lula da Silva accuses Jair Bolsonaro of inciting violence a day after the incumbent supporters torched vehicles and clashed with police. Hello and welcome, everybody, here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour: Ukraine reports a fresh Russian drone strike on its capital as the war is in its 10th month with no end in sight. President Volodymyr Zelensky says Ukraine's air defense systems have shot down all the 13 drones that targeted Kiev, but according to city officials, two administrative buildings have been damaged. So far, no reports of casualties. Meantime, fierce fighting continues between the warring sides around the eastern city of Bakhmut. In recent weeks, Russian and Ukrainian troops have intensified their airstrikes. Russia launched the war in February with the aim of demilitarizing its neighbors. Since then, Kiev's Western allies have imposed an unprecedented wave of sanctions on Moscow while providing Ukraine with military aid. Russia says the Western weapons will only prolong the conflict. And European energy ministers once again failed to overcome deep differences and reach a compromise over a cap on natural gas prices. EU member states are deeply divided as to whether there should be a cap at all. Another outstanding issue is at what price such a cap should be placed. The measure basically aims to avoid dramatic price spikes in the face of a turmoil in energy markets caused by the Ukraine war. Countries including Germany, Austria, and the Netherlands are against a price cap. They fear it could divert much-needed gas cargoes from Europe and further disrupt energy markets. Pro-cap countries including Greece, Belgium, Italy, and Poland say that it would shield their economies from high energy prices. The EU energy ministers will meet again next week for a compromise. The first in a fresh wave of industrial action has gotten underway in Britain. Called by the country's largest rail union, tens of thousands of rail workers have walked off their jobs in a long-running dispute over pay, jobs, and conditions. Saeed Puruza reports from one of many picket lines in London.
More picket lines and travel disruptions as tens of thousands of rail workers across Britain walk out. Represented by the RMT union, for months they have been asking the government for better working conditions and an increase in their pay to match the double-digit inflation. The government says the pay rises are unaffordable and has promised tough action against the unions. The unions say they're standing firm.
This latest round of strikes will show how important our members are to the running of the country and will send a clear message that we want a good deal on job security, pay and conditions for our people. We have been reasonable, but it is impossible to find a negotiated settlement when the dead hand of the government is presiding over and blocking a resolution in these talks.
The strikes come at a cost to the economy in terms of lost working days. And the right-wing media here have been counting that cost. Yet that doesn't seem to have dented public support for the strikers.
The cost of living has gone up, so if they need more money, then they should get a pay rise.
I can see where the rail workers are coming from. They want a pay rise. They're seeing their bills go up every month and they want to make sure they can support their families. At the same time, the government has a really tricky job on its hands to deal with inflation.
I support the strikes and things just because I feel like in certain sectors a lot of people deserve a pay rise anyway at the minute, especially with inflation. But us as travellers on holiday in London as such, obviously it's been a bit of an inconvenience to us.
The rail workers' walkout comes amid a cost-of-living crisis that's seen food and energy prices soar to 40-year highs since the start of the Ukraine war, pushing millions of Britons into poverty. Staff at the crisis-hit National Health Service will also be going on strike this week for the first time in more than 100 years, and the number of sectors joining the strike action is only growing.
We may not see a general strike in the traditional sense, but the way things are going, it is likely that the different trade unions will synchronize and coordinate their action to maximize their leverage for a better deal with the government. Saeed Bourizza, London.
Brazilian president-elect Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has accused far-right incumbent Jair Bolsonaro of inciting violence in the country. The accusation comes a day after pro-Bolsonaro protesters torched vehicles, clashed with police, and tried to invade their headquarters in the capital, Brasilia. Monday's violence came after Brazil's top electoral court officially certified Lula as the winner of the October elections. Lula slammed Bolsonaro for not recognizing his defeat. He said Bolsonaro is acting like a, quote, fascist. Bolsonaro supporters have been protesting ever since his loss in the October runoff. They have blocked roads and are calling for a military intervention to keep Bolsonaro in power. The outgoing president has asked the protesters to end the blocking. Bolsonaro, however, has encouraged what he calls, quote, legitimate protests. And turning now to Peru, where ousted President Pedro Castillo will have to remain in detention for a lot longer despite nationwide protests calling for his release. A court has rejected Castillo's appeal for freedom, with the prosecutors filing a request to hold him in pretrial detention for 18 months. Castillo is facing charges of rebellion and conspiracy. He's denied those accusations during his last hearing on Tuesday. Castillo called on police forces to stop killing people who are thirsty for justice. So far, at least seven people have lost their lives during protests calling for his release. Meanwhile, the former vice president, who replaced Castillo as Peru's president a week ago, has promised to work with the Congress to hold snap elections.
I have said that we will bring the elections forward. Although I do not manage the electoral chronogram, it is up to Congress. They said that the elections would not be until 2024. I am arranging a meeting with the Constitution Committee so that together we can shorten the time frame.
Castillo served as president for about 17 months. He was removed from office a week ago after unsuccessfully trying to dissolve the Congress and rule by decree. During his short-lived term, lawmakers tried to impeach the leftist politician a total of three times. The governments of Mexico, Argentina, Colombia, and Bolivia have condemned Castillo's removal, saying that he's been a victim of anti-democratic harassment since being elected. But the Congress and Prime Minister argue that they've acted in line with the Constitution and that the president was impeached for his moral incapacity. Iran and China have signed 16 MOUs to kickstart implementing the 25-year roadmap for the two countries' strategic partnership. This is the first step Tehran and Beijing have taken in line with their long-term cooperation agreement. Gisumi Shahnadi has more on that.
The implementation of a comprehensive strategic partnership between China and Iran is getting a kickstart as a high-ranking delegation headed by the Chinese Vice Premier Hu Chunhua meets with Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi in Tehran. After his meeting with the Iranian president, the Chinese top official met with Iran's finance minister, where the two sides signed 16 MOUs to boost cooperation in different fields. Oil and gas, banking, investment, and strategic projects are the four fields of economic cooperation that are now on top of the agenda. There has already been a roughly 20% increase in trade, and the outlook for 2023 is even higher, according to Iran's finance minister. China is still Iran's biggest oil client, despite Washington's bid to bring Tehran's exports down to zero. And its close involvement in the built-out of Iran's manufacturing infrastructure is seen entirely in line with its Belt and Road Initiative. Analysts say this could represent a shift in the global balance of the oil and gas sector and create new markets where no U.S. dollars are involved.
Iran-China relations date back to the ancient Silk Road. Both countries have always had close ties, but over the past couple of years, their relations have become even more significant, with the U.S. putting pressure on China on the one hand and placing sanctions on Iran on the other. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Well, activists, along with family members of former Iranian judiciary official Hamid Nouri, have gathered near the Swedish embassy in Tehran to call for his immediate release from Swedish prison. Salman Khoudry reports from the Iranian capital.
Relatives, family members and a group of activists gathered in front of the Swedish embassy in Tehran to demand the release of former Iranian judiciary official Hamid Nouri, who has been sentenced to life imprisonment by a Swedish court. The protesters condemned the politicized verdict issued against Hamid Nouri, who has been kept in solitary confinement for over 3 years.
On the one hand, by issuing a verdict against Hamid Nouri, the former Iranian official, based on accusations leveled by MKO terrorist group, Sweden has actually recognized the terrorist group and has allowed its members to live freely on its soil. On the other hand, during the legal procedure, Hamid Nouri has been deprived of his legal rights to defend himself properly in the court because he could not have access to an independent lawyer. He had no contact with his family for 8 months, and he has been under white torture.
Earlier, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian called on the new Swedish government to immediately release Hamid Nouri, saying the politicized case of Nouri and efforts by the Mujahideen Khalq organization MKO terrorist group to disrupt a legal probe into the case have seriously harmed relations between Tehran and Stockholm.
We demand that justice be done with regard to my father, because according to many lawyers, the Swedish court verdict against my father was totally politicized and has no legal ground, and there is no concrete evidence for providing the accusations against my father. Therefore, we condemn the court ruling and demand his immediate release.
Swedish authorities alleged that Hamid Nouri was involved in the execution and torture of the MKO members in 1988. He has strongly rejected the allegations.
According to Iranian officials, keeping an individual in solitary confinement for 3 years is tantamount to torture, which runs against EU Convention on Human Rights. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Well, Hamas members and supporters are attending a mass rally in Gaza as they mark the 35th anniversary of the creation of the Palestinian Resistance Movement. This is the latest live images that we're getting right now from Gaza City as the ceremonies have commenced. Hamas was established soon after the first Palestinian uprising, or the Intifada, broke out against the Israeli occupation. The movement has been administering Gaza since 2007. When it scored a surprise parliamentary victory back then. Every year, Hamas marks the anniversary of its foundation with military parades and rallies, the likes of what we're seeing right now, live images that we're getting from Gaza. Speaking on the occasion earlier, the head of Hamas Political Bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, emphasized the movement's unwavering support for and its commitment to the Palestinian cause. Israel has been imposing a harsh land, sea, and air blockade on more than 2 million people living in the Gaza Strip for about 15 years now. It has also killed and maimed thousands of Palestinians during 4 major wars against the coastal enclave. So we're now joined by our correspondent, Asher Shannon, who's with us from Gaza on hand at the anniversary ceremonies that are taking place right now. Ashraf, welcome to the program. Tell us more about today's rallies and a little bit of about the backstory of Hamas. As we just mentioned, it was established back in 1987, coinciding with the first Intifada. Why was Hamas established?
Yes, Bardia, Hamas, as you said, was established back in 1987, 35 years ago, right after the first Palestinian Intifada, or almost at the same time. Hamas came as an alternative to the secular Palestinian movements at the time, as the resistance movement adheres to the teachings of Islam to run itself, and also to manage the affairs of its members since 1987. Today, tens of thousands of people have thronged the streets of the Gaza Strip to pay homage to Hamas. One of the main reasons for Hamas's popularity is the movement's refusal to recognize the Israeli regime, and also to adhere and also its adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli occupation for the sake of liberating the entire historical land of Palestine, as well as Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. Hamas, in 2006, overwhelmingly won the Palestinian legislative elections, and immediately after that, it was boycotted by Western countries. And almost a year after that, took control of the Gaza Strip and has been managing the Gaza Strip. Hamas has survived almost 16 years of Israeli blockade and also multiple wars and military aggressions that aimed to weaken the resistance movement. But Hamas continues to gain strength day after day, Bardia.
Sure. Ashraf, how would you describe some of the Hamas resistance group's major achievements? And overall, where does Hamas stand in the equation of resistance against the Israeli occupation?
Well, Hamas has achieved a lot, especially when we talk about its military and what it called its army, the Ezzedine Qassam brigades that managed to humiliate the Israeli forces back during Sword of Al-Quds battle in 2021. And as I said, it adheres to resistance as the key to liberating Palestine. And also Hamas is part of the axis of the resistance against the Israeli regime.
All right, thanks a lot, Ashraf. Shannon joining us from Gaza.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Yani.
Bazaar.
Almost everything around us is either made of plastic or has some plastic component. The use of plastic products in our daily lives is so widespread that many of our regular activities require a wide range of plastic accessories and products. Plastic is everywhere, from our homes to offices, businesses, and health centers. It is also used to make aeroplane parts, cars, trains, and so much more. Plastic is one of the most widely used materials due to its versatile features, which have boosted economies across the globe.
Well, hello there, and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the program that analyzes profits, markets, industries, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we are going to take a look at Iran's plastic production. We wanted to see how this market is doing and check out some major players in this sector. We will also peek into some of its contributions to the national economy. Enough said. Let's walk through today's bazaar.
To become more familiar with plastic products and their production, we visited Parhom Plast Arya. This company has been around for many years and is a major contender in the plastic products market. It makes hundreds of plastic-based products for a variety of uses. Some products are household plastic items such as baskets, dishes, utensils, and even larger things like chairs and tables. All things considered, this company provides some of the highest quality products found in the market. This is mainly because of its choice of raw material, which is rigorously tested for quality in its control labs. Moreover, raw materials such as polymers and additives are abundant inside the country. So, it doesn't have to look far for its feedstock. One of the advantages this company has is it controls the whole production and distribution process from design to sales.
In terms of household plastic products, there's always a thirst for newer and more stylish products coming from consumers. So companies must stay on their toes and create new molds each year to offer products that excite customers. However, making new molds is not always easy, and it can be an expensive process. That's why some companies choose to import molds instead, while others develop their own in R&D departments.
This company's research and development division is at the center of all productions. It is where new products are created. It is also tasked with keeping the company up to date in several fields, including production, consumer trends, and other domestic demands. Plus, it is no surprise that this unit is also where national and international standards for safety and durability are applied. It might be interesting to know that this company was a pioneer in setting standards through some of its products nationwide. Each year, this company evaluates the market to release the most recent product designs, giving it a competitive edge over other brands. Its massive production facilities can produce thousands of tons of products each year. As part of its future vision, this company is already expanding its facilities by launching a new production line. Once this new unit is up and running, it will add some 8,000 tons to its annual production. It also hopes to create its very own high-quality molds in the near future. This firm has overcome significant challenges over the years to enjoy its many achievements. Presently, this company is operating under its potential production capacity, and its ultimate goal is to use its full potential along the lines of exports.
Now, plastic is known as a group of synthetic or semi-synthetic materials created through the polymerization process. So, one of the most prominent ingredients in this mix is polymers, which are a derivative of petrochemical products that come from processing oil. It's not surprising that Iran has an ever-expanding polymer industry, given its large oil reserves.
We looked at some figures from the National Plastic and Polymer Industries Association. Data showed that the polymer industry gets most of its feedstock from domestic petrochemical complexes. Plus, there are some 8,000 production units that make plastic products nationwide. These units have a total capacity to produce roughly 13 million tons annually. Some $3.3 billion worth of polymer products were exported last year. That's according to the National Plastic and Polymer Industries Association. Furthermore, it says these exports registered a 23% increase compared to the year before. The association also says exports in this sector make up roughly 7% of the country's non-oil exports. Iran's oil and petrochemical industries are subject to US-imposed sanctions. Still, the wide variety of their products and high international demand has kept the market floating. On a broader scale, switching attention to added value products to boost non-oil exports has been a transformative move for Iranian industries. Through this, the country has tapped into its advanced domestic capabilities and diversified its economy toward a knowledge-based one. Household appliances are universal and an integral part of our modern daily life. Nearly all households have some sort of appliance meant to bring ease and comfort to everyday domestic tasks. Additionally, these items assist us in preserving and preparing food, cleaning our clothes, and overall helping us stay healthy. In general, the near 100% penetration of appliances in homes shows how crucial they are for our way of life and just how abundantly available these items are. This week, we will journey through Iran's massive home appliance industry. We wanted to see how this sector has developed over the years and check out some major players in this manufacturing arena. To become more familiar with this sector, we decided to visit Steel Alborz Industries. It was established 30 years ago and has since become a well-known household brand. This company began its work by producing steel sinks. Later, it added to its product basket and began manufacturing stoves, ovens, stovetop ventilation systems, and taps, among other kitchen attachments. With two factories in Shiraz and one in the capital Tehran, its production facilities can make hundreds of thousands of units annually in over 200 different models. One of these factories is solely dedicated to various molds needed to create its stylishly modern products. Early on in its manufacturing journey, this company used to import steel stencil sheets from Europe. But after becoming a subsidiary of the second largest producer of galvanized steel sheets, it began purchasing most of its raw material domestically. The company uses the latest technology to manufacture its products. Its production lines are equipped with cutting-edge automated assembly systems managed by experienced staff. Nonetheless important is the use of high-quality raw materials and strong sustainable designs are two key components in guaranteeing the long life of these kitchen appliances. Here is a short word on the machines used in manufacturing home appliances in Iran. Many production machines and automated systems, such as steel laser cutters, are domestically produced. Of course, that's not to say all of them are locally made. Some still need to be imported, but it is noteworthy just how much of this equipment is already available in domestic markets. Research and development and quality control are critical activities of this manufacturing company. The R&D department is responsible for developing new products as well as monitoring the market and customers' needs. Its quality control division is built into its production facilities. Here, items are frequently checked and tested with the latest technologies to ensure manufacturing uniformity. As you might know, this also guarantees that each item is made exactly the same, which increases the quality of the final product. The R&D and quality control departments are also responsible for implementing national and international standards, which led the way for its exports. Currently, this company not only distributes its products nationwide, but also sends its items to neighboring and Eurasian markets. This company largely attributes its success to its highly experienced and specialized staff, who are in charge of various production processes. On the whole, it has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Plus, it has dozens of representative agencies across the country. Like many in the home appliance industry, this company has faced many obstacles throughout the years. But its trump card has been its unique approach to solving these challenges. For example, the US-imposed sanctions were one that this company transformed into a domestic opportunity.
Now, Iran domestically produces a lot of raw materials needed in this sector, which spares local manufacturers from spending millions on imports. What's more, domestically supplying raw materials to the home appliance industry has helped it blossom. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here's an overview of the sector and its productions, including some insight into raw materials produced in Iran.
Iran is the 10th largest steel producer in the world, just behind Brazil. However, China is the undisputed producer with nearly 100 million tons of monthly output. That's just to give you an idea of how large the country's steel sector is. It's undoubtedly important, as the country's mammoth industry feeds numerous down-the-line sectors, including home appliance manufacturing. The World Steel Association's figures show that major Iranian steel mills produced nearly 30 million tons of crude steel and products last year. It might be interesting to know that over 30% of total productions are typically exported, generating millions in foreign revenue. But that's not the only industry that supplies raw materials to the home appliance sector. Petrochemical products, such as polymers, which are used to make plastic, also contribute to the production of home appliances. Iran's Home Appliances Manufacturers Union says some 15 million household appliances were produced in the country last year. That's far beyond the original production target of 12 million units set by the government. Meanwhile, Iran exports many of these products to neighboring regions, including Asia and Africa. Last year, the total value of exports was over $300 million, according to Iran's trade promotion organization. All things considered, there is a lot to look forward to regarding Iran's expanding home appliance sector.
Okay, I shall now step aside for several minutes and let my good friend and colleague guide you on an educational adventure out on the field. Take it away.
Most of you have probably thought about biking to work, or biking to most places for that matter, instead of driving. You get a little workout done in your probably sedentary lifestyle, you help the environment, you don't pay for fuel during a global energy crisis, and well, frankly, you look cool. But you never actually got to doing it, or you did it a couple times and realized that it's not for you. Maybe it was too difficult. Maybe you were burned out halfway through and had to take a taxi for the rest of the way, or that you showed up too sweaty for work. If you're still, however, interested in the idea, just not so much the problems, electric bikes are just the thing for you. And just why do I say that? Well, let's imagine you are biking to work and you find yourself burned out, or you get a bad cramp and you can't pedal the bike the rest of the way. So here are your options. You take a taxi and leave the bike, which is not really an option. You go back home hoping you were less than halfway to your destination, otherwise it would be even more difficult to do that. Or wait a good while till your energy level comes back up and miss work a little bit. None of these are elegant options, really. There is one, though. You have an electric bike, so you either don't even pedal at all for the rest of the way and just use the throttle on your electric bike, or you have the bike assist your pedaling so it's not as difficult and draining. You still get a workout done, but you're not drained completely afterwards. When he said 80% of the electronic kits are made in-house, it meant that pretty much the only thing that isn't being made here is the the battery test kits and the LCDs they install on the bike handles that show you your current speed, wattage used by the motor, battery level, etc. And even that has a custom software. The 500, 750 and 1000 watt motors are made in-house and are installed in the way that you are seeing right now. Regular bikes from different brands and manufacturers are taken into the facilities and then they are prepped to have everything installed on them. There are lots of types for bikes and for each bike with its purpose, they might use a different battery capacity and motor. For example, they use a 1000 watt motor and 64 cell battery on their biggest and baddest fat bike meant for rough off-road terrain and a 500 watt motor and a 52 cell battery for their urban bikes that don't benefit too much from the extra horsepower. I mean, it's not actually horsepower, but you know what I mean. The process that goes behind turning mundane regular bikes that are great for a workout to one that is not as good for a workout, but is a lot more convenient and a lot more capable of transporting you from one place to another. So first they need to cut some holes into the chassis, precision holes into these oftentimes aluminum chassis to make room for the connections between the controller as well as the throttle on the handle and the battery pack. So once they have installed, now it's time for the electric motor, which is going to be installed on the rim. So they take the rim off, they disassemble all of the spokes on the rim, they reinstall it on the electric motor, but there's a crucial step here. They need to make sure that the screws of the spokes that are connected to the rim as well as the electric motor are completely balanced so that the rim doesn't skew to one side or the other. So they spin it to make sure it doesn't touch two screws on both sides. If it does touch it and there's friction, they need to re-tighten or re-loosen some of the screws to make sure it's completely balanced. And now, which is designed for the 500 watt electric motor. This is the entire system with the battery pack installed and the controller also attached, as well as the throttle. But there's also another cool thing about this particular display and this whole system, but I'll reserve that for just a few minutes after we talk to one of the people behind this project to give us a little bit more information.
As an engineer and environmental enthusiast, I've always looked for a product to simultaneously save the health of the people and save the environment. And that's why I started a company called EVTech to manufacture electric bicycles in Iran. Currently, we are the largest e-bike manufacturer in Iran, and our bikes are tailor-made to Iranian trains. And people can use them here in our mountainous cities like Tehran easily. Our bikes are ranging from fat bikes, mountain bikes, and city bikes, and have different motors with different output powers. So you can choose from our products based on your need and your applications. At the core, we are a company that mainly manufactures power electronic components of e-bikes and electric motorcycles. We are manufacturing power electronics chargers, power electronic e-bike controllers, and also design brushless DC motors that have been used in our products and electric motors that manufactured by other companies. We also manufacture our battery packs and use very, very sophisticated battery management systems to ensure that our batteries are working in their ideal conditions and are safe to use in everyday basis.
This is the last bit of information that I said I'd be talking about before. So the bike has its regular set of gears. You got the back gears and the front gears. But then there's display, and with this number that shows a assistive gear, let's call it. So when the number is on zero, when you pedal for like one round, it doesn't assist you at all. But as the number goes up, it assists you more and more. So if you pedal the same amount and the number is on like three, it pushes you a lot further than if this number was set to zero. This is great for those times when you feel like you're really burned out and you can't pedal that much, especially when you're in an upward slope. So you
you increase this number, you get more assistance from the electric motor to push yourself forward a lot more. Now it's time for me to take it for a quick little spin. So this throttle is the difference between enjoying bike riding and not so much enjoying it and looking at it as a chore and just a workout. I have been like one of the people that I mentioned at the beginning of the program, the type that wants to bike to more places but doesn't do it because I find myself burned out too quickly when I'm going up a slope. With this, I can enjoy the flat surfaces and the downward slopes in biking, which are a lot more enjoyable than the upward slopes, and just skip the difficult slopes. So I'm seriously considering getting one of these electric bikes myself. And with that, we have come to the end of the program. Until next week.
What an awesome report, as always. Many thanks. Now, let's finish off the program with a look at some news and trends in this sector. As we mentioned, there is a trend of adding value to items to increase their uses and profits. And Iran's nanotech industry is paving the way for a variety of added value products, particularly in the plastics industry.
Iran's Nanotechnology Innovation Council estimates that roughly 800 kinds of Iranian-made nanotech products are in the domestic market. One of these is the development of biodegradable plastic bags through nanotech research. Iran's advanced products in this sector are sent to nearly 50 countries worldwide. Last year, these exports generated over $700 million. Iran is among the top five countries in nanoscience production and scientific achievements in this field.
Plastics are a vital component in Iran's medical device production as well. And this sector is seriously booming with new products each year that help save people's lives.
Last year, Iran produced thousands of medical devices, which it exported to 56 countries worldwide. Iran generally holds a 1% share of the global medical equipment market. Moreover, the Ministry of Health says Iran's stake is worth over $500 billion. That's 200 times more than its value in 2018, demonstrating how fast this sector is growing.
Speaking of plastic, one cannot overlook the harmful impact its waste has on the environment. It's terrible. And plastic bags have the most amount of waste, both domestically and worldwide.
Iran produces some 490 tons of plastic waste each day, and one-third of this is from plastic bags. While Iran recycles a lot of its plastic, controlling this waste is still an uphill battle considering production and consumer practices. Therefore, Iran's Environmental Protection Agency has embarked on detailing more regulations for reducing the use of plastic bags. The draft regulations include replacing plastic bags with biodegradable versions and creating production standards for environmentally compatible plastics. Most importantly, the draft addresses ways to reduce plastic bag use altogether.
Well, that covers today's Bazaar. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, welcome to Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi. One of the keys of life, we said, is to be clean. And the Prophet, the Ahl-Bayt, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, want to see the believers, the mu'mineen, to be clean. It's a trademark of a Muslim to look clean, smell nice, look nice, makes himself or herself representable, acceptable, pleasant to the eye. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, in a hadith we mentioned before, he talks about every part of the body that needs to be cleaned. Among the things that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam has instructed us to do is, he says, inna min al-fitra, is from innate, from within the human being himself. It's embedded in his code. It is in his DNA. He's born with it. The love to be clean. And he says, al-madmadatu wal-istinshaq, that a person should gargle water in his mouth, which means rinses his mouth and rinses his nose as well by inhaling and taking water in his nose, just to clean the nose and the mouth. He says, this is part of innate, part of the human being's nature. Waswak, and to brush your teeth, is also part of the human being's nature. Waqassu sharab, and for men to trim their mustache. A lot of men, we see that the mustache, it grows long enough that it falls on their lips. This is, in fact, makruh, not a recommended act. A person who has a mustache, a man, needs to keep his mustache always trimmed and above his lip line. So this way, when he eats, food does not get stuck on it, or if he wants to kiss his children or other people, it doesn't always come in the way as well. وَتَقْلِيمُ الْأَظَافِرِ, and to cut your nails. And in the Ruwayat, when it comes to nails, always it is recommended to cut them on Friday, or sometimes it says Saturday. And there's a link in the hadith that says, if you cut your nails, it should prevent you from poverty. And nails themselves, if they are not cut, they accumulate a lot of dirt. And because we use our hands to eat with, then you'll find these germs and this dirt and this bacteria finds its way to our food, then into our body through our nails. That's why Islam emphasizes on me and you cutting our nails. Then the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam says, وَنَتْفُ الْإِبْطِ, you need to cut your armpits. وَالْإِسْتِحْدَادِ وَغَسْلُ الْبَرَاجِمِ, and then you need to, fix up your hairlines, the hairlines on your beard. And he says, وَالْإِنْتِضَاحُ بِالْمَاءِ وَالْإِخْتِتَانِ, and that when you go to the bathroom, you need to wash the parts where the najasa comes from, and also purify yourself completely. So you can see that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in this hadith, he started from the head all the way down to the private parts that you need to be clean. Let us take a break and then we continue shortly after.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree,
امام اونطوری که این رو گفته برام گفته دی اون امامش گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. We said one of the keys of life is to be clean and to keep our bodies clean. A hadith from the commander of the faithful Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, he says, تَنَظَّفُوا بِالْمَاءِ مِنَ النَّتْنِ. Clean, bathe, shower yourselves with water from نَتْن الرِّيح, from the bad smells. أَلَّذِي يُتَأَذَّى بِهِ, that it hurts others. Sometimes when we are active and we move around, we go to work, we go places, sometimes we might do some sports, the body naturally releases what we call sweat. That sweat sometimes carries with it smells. If a person works and he's active and his body releases sweat, and that sweat does not get washed, or a person does not bathe, sadly, it turns into an odor that usually hurts and harms other people as they smell, especially if a person, for example, decides not to have a shower or bathe 1 day, 2 days, or 3 days. So that kind of it creates a very strong smell. So the Imam says, such a smell does harms other people. Therefore, as a Muslim, you need to wash, you need to bathe yourself. You go to work, you come back from work, you need to have a shower, especially, you know, for spouses, for partners, because they live with one another. They need to smell nice for one another. Then the Imam Salamullah Alayhi says, تَأَحَّدُوا أَنفُسَكُمْ. You yourself, take it upon you to keep yourselves smelling nice and clean. فَإِنَّ اللَّهُ يَبْغَضُ مِنْ عِبَادِهِ الْقَاذُورَ. For Allah hates from amongst His servants those who are dirty. أَلَّذِي يَتَأَنَّفُ بِهِ مَنْ جَلَسَ إِلَيْهِ. Those whom those who sit next to them, they don't like them. They feel repulsed by them. You sit next to a person, the person smells awful, he haven't had a shower for a day or 2 days, and when you sit next to them, you know, you smell the odor, you're not comfortable, but you can't say anything. The Imam says Allah hates those servants of His. He wants them to be clean. He wants them to be nice, especially in the month of summer, where a person goes out into the streets, so he gets in a cab, or he goes to buy something for 10, 15 minutes, and because of the heat, he sweats too much, he comes back, he's smelly. So a person needs to have a shower. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi says, wash yourselves with water. Constantly keep your body smelling fresh. Some people have showers once a day, some people twice, every 2 days. But at least minimum, it has to be not more than 7 days. And even 7 days, you know, that's because, let's say, back in the day, it was hard for them to get to water. It was hard to get to the bathroom. But alhamdulillah, today, bathrooms are in our rooms. Water is available, cold and hot. So we have practically no excuse to be dirty or to stay dirty for 2-3 days without having a shower. So constantly keeping ourselves clean is a key of life. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children's screams.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.